Targeted tariffs invite targeted retaliation. As a consequence, the Chinese can make an elected president very uncomfortable politically.
Words are freely traded amid talk of new tariffs. It's Wednesday, April 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Malala speaks with VOA about her visit home. Illegal online animal trading. VOA Asia business scene. A planet-friendly burger and plastic clothes. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's ambassador to Washington, Sui Tiankai, told the China Global Television Network Beijing is prepared to take countermeasures if the United States, as expected, imposes further tariffs on Chinese goods. His comments preceded expected new Trump administration duties targeting advanced Chinese technology imports worth up to $60 billion as a response to what is called China's uneconomic transfer of U.S. intellectual property to Chinese companies.
But if they do, we will certainly take countermeasures of the same proportion and of the same scale, same intensity. As for the protection of intellectual property rights, China has been strengthening its efforts and strengthening our legal system on this particular issue, and we are making good progress.
Sui said China's decision to impose penalties on $3 billion worth of nearly 130 U.S. products on Monday was a response to earlier U.S. tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. Although not the only reason, fears of a trade war between the world's two largest economies sparked a sell-off in global stocks. University of Maryland economics professor Peter Morici tells VOA's Victor Beatty the reaction is overblown since the U.S. and China have so far penalized a narrow list of goods.
But there's a big fear because there's more to come. President Trump has promised to target a very large amount of Chinese technology goods because of its piracy of intellectual property. It's a justified response. Whether it's the most effective response is something else, but the piracy of American intellectual property in China is a real issue.
You've written an article called Trump's Long Game with China, Who Will Dominate Artificial Intelligence. What is China doing that is mercantilist in your view?
Well, they've targeted artificial intelligence like they have so many other industries, levying on very heavy subsidies, forcing American companies that are in the business of developing artificial intelligence like Google to form joint ventures and to establish product development labs there, which essentially trains their people. These aren't fair trade practices. Americans can't operate freely in China the way the Chinese can operate here. Instead, they're forced to turn over what they know.
You've written that America has been in a trade and ideological war with China for years, and artificial intelligence will be the final battleground.
Absolutely. Within 10 years, you won't be able to do anything without sophisticated software that replaces human decision-making. It's going to be pervasive in just about every industry. So the country that leads in artificial intelligence is going to have an enormous economic and strategic advantage. The Chinese have targeted this field. It's certainly okay for them to compete with us, but it should be on an even and fair basis. We don't have that, and so now is the time to draw the line in the sand.
You said China has targeted global dominance in AI, artificial intelligence, by the year 2030.
I think it'll be sooner than that if we don't strike back. I think this field's going to move very, very rapidly.
Is President Trump on generally the right course in confronting China economically?
I think he's on the right course to confront them. Whether he's pursuing the correct strategy to force a deal remains to be seen. Targeted tariffs invite targeted retaliation. As a consequence, the Chinese can make an elected president very uncomfortable politically. But let's face it, President Xi doesn't have to worry about getting votes. It would be better to have an across-the-board measure, in my mind, because across the board, we hit all of China's exports. And since they send us so much more than we send them, it's impossible for them to retaliate in equal measure.
Peter Morici suggested one way would be to impose a 20% tariff on all Chinese exports to the United States and put a tax on the conversion of dollars into yuan for purposes of investing in China. Another way would be a system of import licenses that would level the value of Chinese imports to that of American exports to China. Then, he said, the Chinese would have an incentive to buy American products to sustain their export industries. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. U.S.-China trade frictions dim optimism for negotiations. South Korean court to allow live broadcast of Park verdict. Zimbabwe's leader thanks China's Xi Jinping, pledges to boost ties. Downscaled U.S.-South Korea military drills could be part of nuclear deal. Communal tensions rattle an Indian Himalayan region. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Nobel laureate Malala Yousafzai has concluded her first trip back to her native Pakistan, which also took the education activist to her home district of Swat, where she was shot in the head 6 years ago by the outlawed Pakistani Taliban for advocating girls' rights and education. VOA reporter Ayaz Ghul spoke with Malala about her emotional return home.
It is still as beautiful as it was. It was springtime, so it was even more beautiful, and the mountains were green, flowers and fragrance all around, and I visited my home. I saw my neighbors and friends, and everyone was so happy but emotional as well. And I went to my room. I saw my old school trophies, my drawing, and just try to remember each and every day how we lived in that house for before I was attacked, and remembering the family time, having dinner together, lunch together, and playing with my friends and playing cricket on our rooftop. So it was such a beautiful time, and I'm so grateful to the government and the Pakistan Army for making it possible. So I usually don't cry, and it's very rare for me to cry. And I did not know that the speech was going to be live streamed. And so I went to the stage, and I wanted to share my happiness, that I was happy to be home, that I wanted to be home, and I was so desperate to see my land again. And I think it's something that I just could not control. And I cried, but I think it's something that's just emotional. But I wanted to give the message to everyone that I'm Pakistani, I love my country, and I stand for the rights of every child in Pakistan to have access to safe and quality education.
Malala told VOA why girls' education is such an important cause for her.
There is that extreme mindset, spread by the extremists. And in order to protect children from that kind of mindset, we have to make sure that children are in school, in safe schools, and they're getting not just education, but quality education. And also for girls, that they should not just be limited to their houses, but they should be able to take any profession they want. They can be doctors, teachers, engineers, and follow their dreams. So it's important for their region, but also the whole country, because it contributes to the economy, it contributes to the development of the country, helps us tackle the climate change, poverty. So it has so many benefits, not just for the region, not just for that one specific part, but the whole country, and then globally as well. So it's important that we do that, and it's also protection for children, and especially a protection for girls, because if a girl is not getting to a safe school, she's more likely to get married at the age of 13 and 14, she's more likely to be in child labor, she's more likely to be in poverty, she's more likely to be not being able to speak out for herself if she's facing any harassment or any violence. So education is a protection for girls.
When she was shot, Malala was airlifted in a coma to Britain for an emergency surgery and has since been living there and studying at Oxford University. She tells VOA violence was a part of growing up in Swat Valley.
Usually I am not concerned about my security at all. And we lived in Swat Valley. We have seen the extreme of terrorism, where we could not even go to a market, where we could not even go to school. And there used to be suicide attacks and killings every night. So I still remember that time, and we have seen fear and war. So for me, this was not a concern. But yes, in outside world, outside internationally, there are concerns that Pakistan is a terrorist country, or there is no peace in Pakistan. So my trip was important to give the message there is peace in Pakistan, the people of Pakistan, they have stood against extremists. Even in Swat Valley, when people left their homes and became IDPs for 3 months, that was a message to say that we do not agree with these extremists and their ideology, that we are happy to sacrifice our homes, but we are not ready to live with them in that situation. So also right now, the people of Pakistan are getting together and saying no to extremism and terrorism, and I hope that we will stay united like this and ensure that we deliver the positive message of the country.
The shooting inspired Malala's push for girls' education in Pakistan.
After the incident, I started Malala Fund, and my focus was to ensure that all girls can have access to education. And it is still my dream. Like, I want to see every child going to school and no child out of school. So the country that is most important to me is my home, is Pakistan. And we already have done many projects in Swat and Shangla. Recently, we opened a school in Shangla, which is my parents' hometown or village. And it is the first higher secondary school in that village for girls. So it is going to change that whole village through that art of state-of-the-art school, because girls would be able to complete their education, get jobs, contribute to the economy, inspire more girls to go into school, change the mindset in that whole area. And everyone is so excited about that school, that whole village. Also, we support local activists and local champions who do advocacy for education on national level, on provincial level. And they are inspiring and empowering young girl advocates who can speak out for themselves. So what my hope is that we can continue this work that we are doing so far, spending more than $6 million, but continue to do even more work. And I really believe in local advocates, because they are the real change makers. So I'm hopeful that we can support all the local advocates in Pakistan who are focusing on girls' education.
Malala Yousafzai speaking with VOA reporter Ayaz Ghul. You may read more and see more at voanews.com and VOA Asia Facebook. Happening now in Asia, authorities in Thailand say they have seized drugs worth about $29 million and arrested 11 people in recent days as narcotics cases surge in the country. Thai police have dealt with more than 1,000 drug cases since October, compared to about 450 in the previous one-year period. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad, as always, to have you with us on VOA Asia. A new coalition of tech giants and conservationists is looking to drastically reduce the amount of wild and often endangered animals that are trafficked via online services. As Veronica Balderas-Iglesias reports, they hope to cut 80% of the illegal trade by the end of the decade.
The annual value of the illegal wildlife trade is estimated to be more than $20 billion worldwide. And the tendrils of this black market, the fifth most profitable, have already entered the web.
Because it's more anonymous and it's much easier to trade to a bigger global market. The sorts of wildlife that you see illegally traded are things like elephant ivory, marine turtle shells or kerry, even marine turtle eggs, pangolins, the most trafficked mammal in the earth.
Setting their sights on reducing the illegal online trade of these animals by 80% by 2020, the World Wildlife Fund has teamed up with a number of tech giants,
including eBay, Etsy, Microsoft, Google, Alibaba, Tencent, sorts of companies that really have a massive global reach and have presence all over the world. What we're doing here is setting in place a series of policies and procedures to define exactly what is a prohibited item.
Although it was officially launched at the beginning of March, the coalition of private sector tech companies has been experimenting with the strategy for 2 years. And eBay senior manager Mike Carson told VOA it already has concrete results to show for it.
In 2017 alone, we blocked or removed over 45,000 listings on eBay that violate our policy on parts from endangered or threatened species.
Part of this strategy has been to educate clients about the laws and restrictions on these animals.
In those cases where people are actively trying to circumvent our filters, we take harsher action. We can suspend them either temporarily or completely from the site. And we do work with law enforcement as well in certain situations if there's a criminal activity going on.
The members of the coalition are also planning to establish joint alert systems to better counteract the traffickers should they change their modes of operation. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
Coming up, paying more for imported food and slower iPhones. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia, the UN Security Council may visit Myanmar and Bangladesh this month to see firsthand the situation of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who have fled a military crackdown in Myanmar. Access to Rakhine for diplomats, aid workers, and journalists has been very limited since August. Your access to VOA Asia Facebook is always open. Stop by today. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, new trade tariffs and older iPhone discontent are the topics on this week's VOA Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
China has put new tariffs on 128 different products coming from the United States in response to the U.S. tariffs placed on imports of aluminum and steel. 120 products were hit Monday with 15% tariffs and 8 with 25% tariffs, including pork and aluminum. Zhang Zhanping is the Director General at the Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation.
The kinds of products that the U.S. exports to China is relatively simple. It exports bulk commodities, including pork, poultry products, fruits, dried fruits, and there will also be some mechanical and electrical products.
President Donald Trump's tariffs on aluminum and steel went into effect last month. Trump argued the United States has been on the losing side of trade deals for far too long and said that U.S. jobs and wealth had been pouring into other countries. The move was in keeping with his America First campaign promise, but economists feared it would send the country on the path to a trade war. Since then, global financial markets have plunged and U.S. allies have responded in anger. Director General Zhang Zhanping.
I think there is a dangerous signal. The U.S. seems to cast the WTO aside and ignore everything for its America First policy, which is very risky. I noticed that former Director General of WTO, Pascal Lamy, was very angry. He said if the U.S. is going to leave WTO, we will see it off.
Despite the backlash, President Trump is considering new tariffs on Chinese imports that could total up to $60 billion for the alleged theft of American intellectual property. Around 64,000 South Korean iPhone users filed the country's biggest ever class action lawsuit, demanding that Apple pay around $12 million U.S. dollars in total, or around $188 per plaintiff in compensation. They claim Apple was intentionally slowing down older phone models as a way of boosting sales for newer, more expensive models. Apple admitted its software updates slowed down old phones, but said the software was intended to improve power management during peak workloads, thereby keeping phones from shutting down unexpectedly. In addition to issuing an apology, Apple offered discounted battery replacement services for old iPhones. According to a report by Barclays, battery replacement services alone will cost the company $10.29 billion in sales this year. The incident has been a public relations headache for the company, causing its reputation to suffer as Apple has faced 59 lawsuits so far from consumers around the world. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, one of India's most famous landmarks, the Taj Mahal, is placing a three-hour cap on visits to avoid overcrowding at the popular tourist location. The enormous white marble tomb, listed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, can attract at least 50,000 visitors a day on weekends. Make your visit to VOA Asia Facebook as long as you like. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, as the world's population heads toward 10 billion by mid-century, experts are wrestling with how to feed the world without wrecking the planet. It's not easy to find foods with lower environmental impact that still taste as good as the ones they are intended to replace. But chefs and environmentalists are both cheering one new menu item, the mushroom blended burger. VOA's Steve Barragona serves it up.
The juicy burger, made juicier with bits of mushroom.
All right, we're going to flip this one over.
Rob Marasco heads product development at food service company Sodexo.
Normally when you cook a burger on a griddle, you'll see a whole lot of juice come out of it and flow around it. But this one, as you can see, not a lot of that happening because the juice is staying in because the mushrooms are pulling all that juice back in from the meat.
These patties are 3/4 beef, 1/4 mushroom. They're not just juicier, they're also lower in calories, fat, and salt than a regular burger. But Marasco says what really matters is the taste.
When you bite into it, it's kind of like a flavor explosion, and you don't taste mushrooms either.
The mushrooms happen to add another benefit. They also make the burger more planet-friendly, says Richard Waite at the World Resources Institute.
Beef is the most resource-intensive food that we commonly eat. It accounts for about half of the land use and greenhouse gas emissions associated with the American diets.
Americans eat 10 billion burgers each year. If all of them were blended with mushrooms, the greenhouse gas savings would be like taking 2 million cars off the road. While burgers made from plants are becoming more popular, blended burgers can appeal to carnivores.
This is potentially a dish that could have broad mainstream appeal and also pretty big environmental benefits. So it's interesting to see food service companies and restaurants starting to pick this up.
About 400 school cafeterias, universities, and hospitals are preparing more than just burgers with Sodexo's blended beef, Marasco says.
Lasagna, chili, meatballs, meatloaf, all those different things you can make with that product, just like you would make with regular ground beef.
Sonic Drive-In is the first major fast food chain to sell blended burgers. A 2-month trial is underway to find out whether customers think this lower-impact burger is as good as its fans do. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
A Nigerian entrepreneur is turning plastic waste into raincoats, school bags, car covers, and shoes. He says he's doing his part to fight pollution and encourage recycling while making a practical fashion statement. But as VOA's Mariama Diallo reports, not everyone's buying into it.
Nigerian entrepreneur Olayemi Samson is working on his latest piece made from recycled waste to add to his collection. As a little boy models the finished product, a raincoat made of plastic, Samson says this is a way for him to fight pollution.
I got to understand that over 27 million sachet water waste littered on the streets on a daily basis. So I begin to ask myself that, I mean, where this waste, it takes 20 to 30 years before they decay. And where are they going to?
That's when he told himself there's a way of transforming the environmental nuisance into something useful. First, a trip to a dump site to pick up some water bags, then washing and disinfecting them before applying his skill of turning the material into school bags, shower caps, and even car covers. But while it took a moment for some to get used to the idea, he says, many have now embraced it.
Some people were so skeptical about it initially. So when people begin to wear the school bag, the raincoats, you know, they became like a star somehow because it was attracting people's attention that what brought about this creativity of this waste, you know, being used into something useful.
But not everyone is enthusiastic about the idea of reusing plastic bags as clothing.
No, I cannot use it because these water sachets are dirty. It is not good. It is a waste product. I won't allow my child to wear it as a cloth to go to school or a bag to go to school. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes, I can use it because seeing the pictures, it looks lovely. But it depends on the kind of outfit I'm using it for. But I can use it probably for leisure, stuff like that. But I think when it comes to something very serious, I won't use it.
According to a World Bank report, Lagos generates 9,000 metric tons of waste daily. Samson, whose business is not profitable yet, says he hopes to be an inspiration to young people and those in authority when it comes to protecting the environment. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We thank you for joining us today. And we thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.